It's Essential Pittsburgh. I'm Paul Guggenheimer. Philip Vilgach of Shadyside is a 24-year-old Carnegie Mellon University graduate student who was invited to join a Pittsburgh film crew as a translator on a documentary shoot in the Ukraine a couple of weeks ago. In 1994, Mr. Vilgach came here with his parents as refugees from the war-torn Russian region of North Ossetia. But what seemed like a dream job turned into a nightmare when Vilgach and the crew became the targets of a violent attack by a mob in Ukraine with strong pro-Russia and anti-American sentiments. He joins us now in Studio A. Philip Vilgach, welcome to Essential Pittsburgh.
Thanks, Paul. Thanks for having us.
Also joining us is Steve Hoover, the documentary crew's director, who also directed the award-winning documentary Blood Brother. Steve, welcome to Essential Pittsburgh.
Thank you. Thanks for having me.
Philip, let's start with you. How did the opportunity to go to Ukraine come up?
A few months ago, I got an email from someone I know who was forwarded an email about someone looking for a translator for a film that they're doing. And then I got into contact with Dan Yeard, who's the producer on the film. And we've been working together for a few months now. And then an opportunity came up to actually go to Ukraine to interpret for them there while they were finishing up their shoot. So that's how the opportunity came up.
And what was your reaction to being invited to go there as part of Steve's crew?
I was honored to be invited. I was also excited to go because they said they were going to pay for my trip there. So I was really excited to have an opportunity to go back to Ukraine or to go to Ukraine. I had never been back after having left Russia in 1994.
Steve, explain the subject of the documentary that you went to Ukraine to make.
The film is a character portrait about a Ukrainian man. His name's Gennady Mokhnenko. He's essentially for the last 14 years had been working to rescue kids, homeless, drug addict kids from the streets in Ukraine. And so it's a portrait of him. He's a lot of things. He was in the Soviet Army for several years. And he's through that time became a pastor. So he's kind of like really kind of iconoclastic in Ukraine. He's not Orthodox. He's very countercultural in a lot of ways with his work with the children, as well as just his beliefs in general. So we got connected to him through a series of networks, and his story just kind of fell in our lap. And it was one of those things, you know, he looks like a priest, but he's not. But, you know, you kind of look at the surface of the story. It's a homeless a kidnapping priest, and that sort of just really struck us. So we took a lot of interest in it and actually started filming last September before everything started happening in Ukraine. And we were there for 20 days. And, you know, by the time we had left, we had planned to come back in March, and everything had developed in that time. So
a political storm had broken out, to say the least. How big is the problem of street kids in Ukraine who are drug addicted and in many cases homeless?
It was a greater problem. The problem has developed. It has changed dramatically. We actually couldn't find any homeless kids while we were there. But it used to be a problem where he would pull up a van and load 20 kids in a night and take them to a rehab center. And a lot of this is his story. The whole, you know, cleaning up the streets is kind of the first act of the film.
Why is it no longer a problem?
I think a lot of it is what the changing drug culture. A lot of it is the work of people like Gennady, who would go out and fight, you know, politically and socially against different drug lords that would sell these cheap drugs that kids could access.
So this is the subject of the documentary, and what part of the Ukraine were you going to shoot this documentary in?
The city's called Mariupol. It's a small port city. The closest airport was Donetsk, which has been in the headlines a lot with everything that's been happening in Ukraine. And it's pretty close to the Russian border. I'm not sure. Do you remember the actual kilometers?
I think it's like 50 miles from the Russian border.
So you're in eastern Ukraine, and you're right where a lot of people might be Ukrainian, but they don't speak Ukrainian, or if they do, they prefer to speak Russian. That's their first language, and their sentiments, their sympathies are with the Russian government and the Russian people?
Well, that's sort of correct. Most of the people there speak Russian. Actually, the entire time we were there, we maybe heard a few sentences spoken in Ukrainian the entire trip. As for sentiments, I think it's fairly split. Even from the people we talked to, we think that the majority probably actually sided with Ukraine. So I don't know exactly what the sentiments
are. But they're a silent majority.
It seems that way, but I don't actually know number-wise what the who favors what side.
Philip, when you told your parents that you had the opportunity to go to Ukraine during this winter of discontent, how did they react?
They told me I shouldn't go. My dad was quite upset to hear that I had even considered going. He wouldn't even talk to me for a little while. He was really upset that I was going to go, and he tried to talk me out of it. But I think I had my mind set on the trip. I was more excited for the project than worried about the conflict. I really didn't think that we were in a grave danger of going.
Why were they concerned? What did they think was going to happen?
They followed the news pretty closely, and obviously they had both lived through the Soviet Union and have some sort of familiarity with Soviet and post-Soviet politics. And my father pretty much predicted the fact that things are going to start escalating. And he had warned me that, you know, Americans aren't exactly well-liked in that part of the world.
And why is that? Even though there clearly is tension between Russia and the United States, why would they hate an average American?
Well, I think by the time we had gone, about a few weeks before, there's already talks about sanctions that the U.S. was going to impose on Russia and vice versa. That probably coupled with the fact that there was a lot of discussion about Americans actually having played a role in the government overturn in Kiev.
Overthrow of Yanukovych?
Right. And there's been a lot of discussion. I mean, there's been some discussion in the U.S., but it's stronger in Russia because the propaganda works in such a way where it'll, of course, push forward the sorts of discussions to create an enemy. And the enemy in that case was the United States.
So this is all fueling anti-American sentiment. And here you are trying to film a documentary. And I want to go back to your parents here for just a moment, because we know there's turmoil in Ukraine right now. But how were your parents so keenly aware of the danger, of the level of tension that this would likely pose for you and Steve and the entire crew? Because we don't necessarily see this or have heard any recent reports about anti-American activities, right, per se.
I think the majority of it actually comes from the sources that you watch. My parents, or my dad especially, he likes to watch. He watches the news all the time. And in the Chicago area where they live, you actually get RT News. RT, they've been on the news a lot recently. They're the news station centered in Moscow. And he, just by watching RT and what they're saying about Americans, he was able to piece that together, along with a few other sources like Lilianta.ru that was recently just closed down. And since they read Russian newspapers or newspapers in Europe, they actually talk about that a lot more than we talked about that in the U.S.
We're talking with Philip Vilgoch. He is a Shadyside resident and Carnegie Mellon University graduate student who recently was working as a translator on a documentary shoot in the Ukraine, a documentary being directed by Pittsburgh native Steve Hoover. And so you decided to go to Ukraine anyway, in spite of your parents' advice. At what point was the crew attacked and why?
The crew was attacked on the fourth day that we were in Ukraine.
And again, this is what part of Ukraine?
This is the eastern part. It's called the Donbas region. Okay. It's in the city of Mariupol.
Okay.
We had just finished filming a scene outside of Mariupol and in the suburbs. And as we were heading back towards our hotel, we had stopped by a pro-Russian rally, which we'd been informed was taking place close to our hotel. And we stopped there. We've been told that the rally started a few hours before and it had been winding down. And the crew wanted to get some B-roll footage. And shortly after we got there and the rumors started circulating that we were actually American journalists as opposed to American documentary makers, and therefore suggesting that we probably have some sort of political agenda for being there and filming the rally, the rumors grew more aggressive, and people started approaching us saying that, you know, we're Americans and all the issues in Ukraine are because of Americans and we don't like Americans, and that escalated pretty rapidly into us being attacked.
Steve, why was filming the pro-Russia rally important to the telling of this story about Gennady?
To be honest, it wasn't incredibly important. Everything that is happening does affect Gennady, potentially affects the way he works. He longs for better social structure so that he doesn't have to do some of the things that he does. I wanted some footage of not so much – I wanted some protest footage, but I didn't want to put us in danger or in trouble.
Right. And did you weigh that at all? Were you thinking, you know, if I do this, I might be getting – or was it – or did you go into this completely innocently?
Somewhat innocently, but we definitely weighed everything. We had the option to go to Donetsk and fill violent protests, which we wanted to avoid. And none of us were looking for trouble. We looked at the situation in Mariupol. It was a midday protest. We went 2 hours into the protest, so it had already been dying off by the time we got there. Gennady felt very confident that we wouldn't have any issues, that he would sort of, you know, protect us while we were there, communicate for on our behalf. And people in the city knew him, so he didn't see any problems with it. There was no Ukrainian opposition there. There was no pro-Ukrainian opposition. So it seemed like a safe bet. And there was plenty of press and media there. There was a whole press and media section. So we tried to just fit into that.
And why were they focusing on you?
I think they – well, initially it was Beards is one thing I heard.
Yeah.
And I think they really –
Beards. Yes. But that was unusual?
Yeah, I think we – out of everyone in the entire rally of the couple hundred people, we – the five of us or the six of us may have been the only ones with beards.
One of our crew members had a very large beard.
Yeah.
That's kind of surprising. I mean, you would think that I guess – you might assume that Russians or Ukrainians would have facial hair, but apparently they don't.
That was kind of the thing that we kept hearing. You know, that was like the – well, that was what flagged us, really made us stand out. I think a few other things as well. But when they heard us speaking English, that was a big game changer. And then I think there was a little bit of confusion between the different people from the crowd trying to communicate with cameraman, wanting some FaceTime. But seeming kind of intense. Some of the guys seemed intense. One guy approached me. And I kind of put my camera down because usually when people look angry, you don't want to film them unless you have a lot of guts to hold the camera and keep going. But he was getting angry that I wasn't filming. He was like, "Oh, what? You don't want to film my pro-Russian opinion? Why not?"
They had thought for a moment that we had stopped filming because they were a pro-Russian rally, and there was a lot of confusion actually in the video that we had shot. We hear two different people saying two different things. One person was angry that we were shooting the rally, and another person was angry that we had stopped shooting the rally. So there's a lot of confusion, both aimed at us and just among the rally goers themselves.
So there's tension. Voices are getting raised, and then what happens?
Well, it was interesting. Some of the eyes that were kind of on us as we were walking around. Some guys seemed questionable. Some guys were provoking, trying to provoke things. Phil got called something pretty intense in the crowd that he picked up on. And really what it seemed like with these different characters that seemed to be mixed within the crowd, that they needed a target. They needed somebody, something to I don't know if it was to draw attention, to create a buzz. And I think we were the easy targets. So we actually did realize pretty quickly it was time to go. Phil was like, "Guys, this is not going well. Let's get out of here." I was personally fine with what we had. We weren't looking to stay there all day anyway, and we had enough footage. And so we started to leave.
And that's when it turned violent. What happened as you tried to get away?
As we were walking towards the van, which was parked on the opposite side of the plaza where we got out, we were walking away from the shouting. A lot of people were cussing and yelling at us, and we thought we were just making our way away from the tension. A few people started to follow us. One man in particular, who was the first to initiate any sort of physical contact, he was saying something to the cameraman that was with us, and I had asked the cameraman to walk behind me so he doesn't hit the camera or steal the camera or whatever. And then he ended up grabbing my shirt, and once I pushed them off, I think a lot of people perhaps saw the interaction or had already been following. And after that, people started running after us. And we had made our way to the van. And actually, I don't even remember what happened, you know, from when we got to the street and into the van. It was kind of –
They were trying panicking. To pull you out of the van apparently.
After we were already in the van, yeah. After diplomatic talks that failed, someone tried yanking me out of the van, and the interpreter that was with us, the local interpreter that was with us, they tried to pull her out of the van as well.
And there's video on the internet of the van trying to get away, and it's being shot by a cameraman that got left behind, who didn't even realize apparently what was – one of your cameramen who didn't realize what was going on.
Well, the cameraman who was left behind, he was still back at the place of the rally. He was at the building. And as things started getting crazy, there was a girl with him that spoke Russian who was just kind of watching his back. She was part of our entourage. But she grabbed him. She said, "Keep your mouth shut. Come with me." So she basically protected him. But there were a lot of bystanders and other people who had cameras who started to film the van. So John, who was the other cameraman, didn't actually make it to the van. He didn't even see the van until it drove by him destroyed, and he was just he only saw the driver inside and was just completely confused because he didn't know what had happened.
He ended up being okay, but as you were speeding away, another car pulls up behind you, and describe what happened. Philip.
I saw a car pull up behind us as we were maybe 30 seconds after we had left the main the place where the incident happened before that. It was a red car. It was a small, old Soviet car. And they were driving behind us and honking. And for a while, we were confused as to why they're honking. Either they're trying to, you know, bring attention to the van, or they're, you know, signaling their support and they're driving with us to wherever we're going. We had no idea. And then it became pretty evident once they popped a black flag out of the driver's side window. And then someone pulled a gun out of the passenger side window. Someone pulled a gun out of the back window on that side, and they started shooting out our tires. They had the first shot took out the driver's side tire, so the van, you know, was driving lopsided. It was slanted because one of the side was driving on its axle. There was no tire to be found at all. It was just blown out. After shooting out or attempting to shoot out the other tires, they had driven up next to the van the whole time before that they were behind, and they started shooting into the windows. And I think they managed to get a few of the windows out. They knocked a few of them out with the gun.
And what are you doing inside the van as this is all happening?
We're ducking. We're trying to keep our heads under the windows, because we think that they did fire into the car itself, but those must not have been gunpowder bullets, because we didn't see any penetration of the actual vehicle, only the windows and the tires. So we're just on the ground of the van, speeding towards the police station.
Were you thinking that you might die?
I thought so. I actually that was the point at which I thought we were definitely going to die, because they had at one point they had started driving in front of us, and I thought they were going to pump on their brakes.
There's a vehicle behind us as well.
Yeah, we were never really sure what the other vehicle was about. So I thought that we were going to get stopped, because we were traveling at this point maybe like 20 miles an hour, because the car just wasn't going very fast. They didn't have any wheels or any tires. I thought they were going to jump out and get in the car and kill us personally. But that was just my feeling of the situation.
Philip, you said one of your chief concerns was knowing that you were going to die a violent death without making peace with your parents.
Yeah, I think making peace with my parents meant more so that the fact that I was going to die this tragic death after my parents had asked me not to go. And it was I was obviously very upset of the fact that that my parents were going to be extremely upset, and you know, who knows what was going to happen to them if they had found out that I died in that way after telling me that I shouldn't go. So that was, yeah, for me, that was a pretty pretty intense moment.
How were you able to escape?
We eventually.
What happened, Steve?
We entered another district. There was the red car in front of us, and then this gray SUV type mm-hmm. car behind us. And as we didn't realize it at the time, but we were drawing closer to a police station. And as we did that, the cars separated from us. And we pulled up. It was a dead end, but at the end of the street was a police station. So we grabbed everything and ran inside. And as I think one of the scarier moments from not besides being inside the truck while I was being destroyed was getting into the police station and seeing people show up, those some of those shady characters gathering around the van outside the police station. And even some of the officers looked unsettled by it because, you know, it's been nothing in Ukraine for groups to storm buildings. And I think there was some of that fear that the mob would gather at the station, actually.
I think they were unhappy that we came there because we were, you know, they were just having a normal day and that we showed up there and brought the mob with us and they weren't too pleased about that.
So how were you able to get out of the country?
Danny had got on the phone with the production company that that he and Steve worked for, and they had booked us tickets, the first tickets out of Ukraine that didn't go through Russia. So our two options were Germany or Turkey. Originally, we were supposed to fly through Turkey, but we had got tickets out of Germany. And after telling the police that we had no intention of filing any sort of
complaint or charge.
just in order to get out of the police station and get to the airport, we got a police escort to our hotel where we picked up our things. We checked out in a matter of minutes, and then got a police escort all the way to the airport in Donetsk, which is about a two hour drive. And we had stayed in a police barracks, staff room, police barracks for, we just locked in there for 16 hours. And then we caught a plane out.
What did your parents say when you finally made it back to the United States?
Told you so. No, my parents were obviously relieved. It was the first conversation was just making sure that we were okay. But my dad had made sure to bring up the fact that he had told me about exactly what was going to happen, and I ended up, of course, apologizing. And
Steve, will you go back to Ukraine?
Oh, absolutely! Yeah, definitely.
How will you be able to finish the documentary?
Well, I mean, everything's basically shot. The film is finished. We have years of archival footage that Gennady had given us from the work he had done of basically cleaning up the streets. So the only thing that I feel like would make us go back is the outcome of everything that's happening. But there's no telling when things will, you know, really pan out. So I feel like we have everything shot.
Well, we're glad that you have everything shot and that you weren't shot and that you've made it back to the United States, both of you safe and sound. Phil Vilgoch is a CMU doctoral candidate studying the history of the Soviet Union. Phil, thanks for joining us.
Thank you very much for having me.
And Steve Hoover is an award-winning documentary filmmaker. Steve, thank you for joining us here on Essential Pittsburgh.
Thanks. Thanks for having us.
Coming up, your success at work often depends on how well you get along with others. Independent career consultant Sasha King gives us a primer on office etiquette. It's Essential Pittsburgh on 90.5 WESA.